Oh, no, I didn't mean.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on.
We're saying now we're gonna have a substitute teacher. We spend the whole time period doing exercises and reading, and we're gonna have to do a thing.
Right. One of you would probably have to be the substitute. Glenn was going to be? Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, we could have Glenn give all the answers to these. Well, let's run through that exercise 44 here. I believe that we assigned that for last time. And to save time, I think I just may run through all of these except for the last section there. Then we'll go around the class with those. Okay, well, that's what I'll do. And be reading along here and double-check your own answers and so forth here. And in case I slip an error in here someplace, I think I've got these all in order here, but sometimes that'll happen. So the first section here is they give you the indicative. They want you to give the imperative and the subjunctive forms. So a little review of imperative and then the subjunctive also. So number one, que rus es, and of course preserving the person and number and so forth. So number one, que rus es, you should have for the imperative, que rusa, double sigma epsilon, and subjunctive, que rus es, with aided with the other subscript, sigma. So it sounds the same, but it's going to have aided with the other subscript. Number two, akuusin should be akuetosan for the imperative, akuetosan. That's epsilon tau omega sigma alpha nu, third person plural. And, didn't read my writing here. And then for the subjunctive, akuosi or akuosin, that would be with an omega sigma iota nu. Number three, akusate, you should have for the imperative, akusate. Akusate, just no augment there, basically, is about the only difference. And then for the subjunctive, akusate, akusate, eta tau epsilon for the subjunctive form, for the aorist. Number four, hetoimazete, excuse me, second person plural. The imperative would be hetoimazete, same form. And the subjunctive, hetoimazete, eta tau epsilon. The only difference there. Basically, your eta pattern. Then, hetoi maste for number five. The imperative would be hetoi masteto, theta, eta, tau, omega. Hetoi masteto. Yes. It'd probably be on the eta there because your omega's long, so you can't get any further. In other words, the accent on verbs is going to be recessive. Try to get as far forward to the front of the word as possible. But if the last letter is long, then it can only go to the antepenal. To the penal. It should be hetoimasteto. So the spelling would be epsilon with rough breathing, tau, omicron, iota, mu, alpha, alpha, sigma, theta, eta, tau, omega. Okay, and then hetoimaste, with eta with the order subscript on the end for the subjunctive form. And I think that one takes the circumflex on the eta, too. Hetoimaste. That's what I have here. Let's see. Yeah, I think it's going to draw that accent, right? Okay, hetoimaste. Subjunctives are going to be a little odd in this respect. Okay, then number six, hures would be hure without the sigma for the imperative, hure, otherwise it'd be the same. And then hures with eta with the order subscript sigma. Then for the subjunctive. Then baptizes should be baptize, just an epsilon ending for the imperative. And then baptizes with eta with the order subscript again, instead of epsilon iota. Number eight, graphe, the grapheto, epsilon tau omega, and then graphe with eta with the order subscript for the subjunctive. and that's the present, so the accent stays where it belongs. Number nine, pempeta, would be pempeta for the imperative, same form, and then pempeta, eta tau epsilon for the subjunctive. Okay, so you're getting an eight instead there. And number 10, diokusin should be dioketosan, epsilon tau omega sigma alpha nu for the imperative, and the subjunctive diokosi or diokosin with an omega instead of the omicron epsilon there. Omega sigma iota with optional nu. Number 11, edioxan would be dioxatosan for the imperative, alpha tau omega sigma alpha nu. And subjunctive dioxosi or dioxosin. Now there you're going to have the C there because the sigma being added, then omega sigma iota with optional nu. Question? Yes, maybe I didn't note that, but on the imperative would be dioxatosan. That's a C also. Okay. Number 12, doxazetai, you would have for the imperative doxazesto, I guess. Accent's going to have to go down there. I didn't put it on here. But it'd be epsilon sigma theta omega. Then subjunctive doxazetai, eta tau alpha iota. Okay. Doxazetai. Then number 13, ebaptisato would be just plain baptisasto, no augment, baptisasto, alpha sigma theta omega, and then baptisetai, no theta there, baptisetai, sigma eta tau alpha iota. Number 14, pistuates would be pistua, just epsilon ending, pistua. And then pistuase with eta with the iota subscript instead of epsilon the iota sigma that you started out with. And then number 15, at baptisteta would be baptisteta, just drop the augment off and you have it for the imperative. And then for the subjunctive, baptisteta, same form also except the accent would be baptisteta. You get an accent shift there to the circumflex over the eta. Okay, questions anybody on that first section? Then contract verbs. He seems to love to give you all the contract verbs in exercises here. Okay, going down here, what you're supposed to do then is put the various morphemes in like this pattern gives and then do the contraction and come with what you can here. So for the a-o verbs, part A, present subjunctive active, they give you the first two forms there. Then the third one there, agapa plus eta plus iota becomes agapa, alpha with the iota subscript there in the ending. The plural, first person plural, agapa plus omega plus men gives you agapo men with omega, mu, epsilon, nu. Number two, the second person, agapa plus eta plus tau, epsilon, tau epsilon becomes agapata, alpha, tau epsilon. And then agapa plus zero for the third person, agapa plus zero plus OC, omega, sigma, iota, becomes agaposi, omega with a circumflex, sigma, iota, optional nu. Then your next present subjunctive, middle, and passive, first person singular, agapa plus omega plus mu, alpha, iota, becomes agapomai, omega, mu, alpha, iota. Second person, agapa plus zero plus eta with the iota subscript becomes agapa with alpha circumflex iota subscript ending. Now third person, agapa plus eta plus tau alpha iota becomes agapatai, alpha with circumflex tau alpha iota. First person plural, agapa plus omega plus metha, mu, epsilon, theta, alpha, becomes agapometha, omega, mu, epsilon, theta, alpha. And here your omega is just going to have an acute because you can't take the circumflex being in that position. Number two, second person there would be agapa plus eta plus sigma theta epsilon. Agapasta, alpha with the circumflex sigma theta epsilon. And third person plural, agapa plus omega plus nu tau alpha iota becomes agapontai, omega circumflex nu tau alpha iota. Okay, the eo verbs at the top of the next page. First two are given to you there. First person singular. Third person singular would be poia plus eta plus iota. And that becomes poie, eta with iota subscript, circumflex. First person plural, poia plus omega plus men becomes poiomen, omega, mu, epsilon, nu. Circumflex and omega there. Poia plus eta plus tau epsilon becomes poieta. Poieta, eta with the circumflex, excuse me, eta with the circumflex, no iota subscript on this one, and tau epsilon. Then poia plus zero plus OC, omega sigma iota, becomes poioc, omega sigma iota, circumflex on the omega. Present subjunctive, I'm just mentioning these accents just because in the subjunctive, they kind of draw your attention. It's kind of good to get used to the accents on the subjunctives. At least for recognition value, sometimes they can, you know, draw your attention and you can get pretty good information from them. But present subjunctive, middle, and passive. Poia plus omega plus mu alpha iota becomes poiomai, omega, mu alpha iota. Second person, poia plus zero plus eta with the iota subscript becomes poie, eta with the iota subscript, circumflex. Third person, poia plus eta plus tau alpha iota becomes poietai, eta tau alpha iota. Circumflex on the eta. First person plural, poia plus omega plus metha becomes poiometha, omega, mu, epsilon, theta, alpha. Again, an acute on the omega because it's in the antipenal position. Then poia plus eta plus sigma, theta, epsilon, poiesta, eta with circumflex, sigma, theta, epsilon. And poia plus omega plus nu tau alpha iota becomes poiontai, omega with circumflex nu tau alpha iota. Okay, now for the OO verbs, it says give the ideal contracted form. Some forms which actually are found are irregular. So it just gives you a little hint here and give you a footnote down there on some of those. Okay, play rho plus zero plus omega would become play rho omega with circumflex. Play rho plus eta plus iota sigma would become play rhois omega iota, excuse me, omicron iota sigma with the circumflex over the iota there. Play rho plus eta plus iota becomes play rhoi omicron iota ending with circumflex. And first person plural, play rho plus omega plus men be play rho men omega circumflex mu epsilon nu. Play rho plus eta plus tau epsilon would be play rhota, omega tau epsilon, omega with circumflex. Play rhota. And play rho plus zero plus OC would be play rhoc, omega with circumflex, sigma iota optional nu. Question? Yes, Eric?
Take on plural, play rho, an omega, which is the.
I gave it eta there. That might be a mistake. Is eta correct? Let's see. Got to find the page where he breaks those down. Okay, stem formative. It's omega before nasals, mu and nu, zero before suffix, elsewhere eta. So we're not before a mu or a nu, so it would be eta here. So the bottom of page 265 there tells you what the stem formative is going to be for the subjunctive. So this would be an eta. But then the contraction, you see, the omicron plus the eta results in an omega. That omega the final omega comes out as a result of contraction rules. Okay? All right, any other questions there? Okay, 44C, we'll do this one together. This shouldn't be too difficult. What we'll do is we'll go around the room on this, and I'll have you read the Greek the way it is, and then read it again with your substitution for your with your subjunctive form. So basically what you're supposed to do, transform the indicative form in each Greek sentence into roll over into a subjunctive form, retain the aspect, present or aorist, so that the transformed sentence will correctly render the English sentence beneath it. Change the negatives, ou to may, etc., if necessary. By the way, one little note here. We had a question, I think, last time or the time before about the aorist versus the present in the subjunctive and whether what was the difference. And I did some more checking on this in Roberts and so forth. And the difference is of aspect, like we said. And again, it's that old punctiliar versus progressive action difference. And as far as numbers are concerned, the subjunctive, the aorist subjunctive, the aorist is by far the more predominant form in the New Testament. Most of them are aorist, and then some of them are present. When you see a present, the basic idea is that you use the aorist unless there's a reason to emphasize progressive aspect, and then they'll use the present. But by and large, it's aorist. Aorist subjunctive is the most common form you'll see. And there is a perfect subjunctive that exists. We haven't had perfect yet, so we haven't been able to deal with that. But it's relatively rare. It's not used very frequently at all. So most of the time you're going to see aorist subjunctive, then a few presents, and then rarely some perfect subjunctives. Okay, so that just clarifies that one point we had some questions about last time. All right, the model form here is ou poiesate ton dendron kalon, and that you transform this me poiesate ton dendron kalon. Don't make the tree good. So you're just taking it from a subjunctive, from an indicative form, and turning it into a subjunctive form in this case. Okay, this negative command idea. So you're going to be doing basically that in the rest of these, except in some cases it won't be a negative. All right, number one, I guess, yeah, go ahead, John. It's only six of these, kind of like that. Yeah, just read the Greek as it is, and then I suppose, yeah, why don't you translate it the way it is, and then the English down below is giving it in the subjunctive with the translation, so you already have that. So and then give the subjunctive form. Actually, you don't need to read it through both times. Just read the Greek the first time, and then tell me what the new verb form would be, and then we'll leave it at that. Okay.
Eremen ekomen prosponteon.
Okay.
And the new verb would be ekomen with an omega.
Right. Ekomen with an omega. And of course, the original sentence would be translated what?
We have peace with God.
Yes, we have peace with God or peace toward God. And the new sentence, of course, they give you, let us have peace toward God. Okay, so he's translating pros as with. But that's not that bad in this case. However, the idea of pros has got a directional element to it. Okay, number two. Jim. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. It's the same for the subjunctive in this case, right? So it's agapomen tu sekthrus hemon. So the first sentence would be translated what is it before, assuming that, you know, you'd have to go by context, of course.
We love our enemies.
Yes, we love our enemies, and the new one would be let us love our enemies. Okay, so if you just saw that isolated sentence, you'd have to go by context to know whether it was an exhortation or whether it was a statement.
Yeah, it's the same one.
Mm-hmm. It turns out it's the same on this one. Because, and why does it turn out to be the same?
Okay.
Yeah, it's a contract verb. Okay, so you get kind of two rules overlapping here. All right, third one, Dan. Okay. Okay, it could be, yes, you could just make it just an indicative form here. Yes, you are not going, probably, well, let's see, is it aorist? So, yeah, you have not gone into the holy city, or you did not go into the holy city. Okay, and then to make it an imperative idea here, what would you do? There's something else you have to change besides the verb in this one. Right.
To may.
To may, right. Exactly. Yes, me poriutheis. And theta, eta with the older subscript, sigma, ending on that. Right, 18 colon. Jim, question?
Yeah, I want to ask you one question on number two.
Yes.
You use that, like off test, they use one of those words, like that.
Yes.
Would that be seen, words like that to show that?
Sometimes you will, if there's a ambiguity or something, or if there's a strong emphasis, then you'll perhaps see that. It's not going to be seen all the time, but if you see it, it's going to give a little bit more emphasis and perhaps resolve some ambiguity. In a case like this, you might see it. You know, if the context was not sufficient to nail it down, and there might be some doubt about it, you might see off-S there.
Does that happen very often?
Well, I haven't really done an analysis to see about that. There's one example here in the book, Matthew 7:4, aphes ekbalo to karfos, and ekbalo could be ambiguous, and so they've done it there. But it would just be a matter of checking to see if every time it's ambiguous they do that. I wouldn't necessarily expect them to be always resolving the ambiguities, but perhaps more often than not. Nor would I expect this to be done only to resolve ambiguity. It may be done also for emphasis, clarity. Okay, was there a question, Glenn?
Well, I had a question on number three.
Number three, okay. Was there anything more on this other before me? Okay, go ahead, Glenn. Yes, circumflex over the aorta with the aorta subscript there. Yeah, because it's aorist. The aorist ones are usually getting that circumflex in the last syllable.
Is this a deponent verb?
Yes. Yeah. Thoriumai is a deponent verb, so that's why you're getting passive-like forms. So it's a passive form, but it's active meaning. Okay. Anyone else? Number four, then. We're up to Eric.
Is that the next one?
Okay.
We receive them as brothers.
Right. We receive them as brothers, and then subjunctive would be.
Dexomatha.
Right. Right. Dexomatha. Okay, no augment, and then you get an omega there. So dexomatha autus hos adelphus. Let us receive them as brothers. Good. Questions, anyone? Okay, Glenn, number five. There's two words. Yes.
And the
right.
Omega.
The omega.
And no augment.
Right, no augment. So you drop the augment off and get poieso men. And
what are we doing in this original?
What did we do? Yeah, you probably have to say it that way, right? What did we do? And then the new one would be, what are we to do? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Number six, Mark.
The new plural didn't come with it.
Right.
And the transformation would be, may el theta mathemon.
Okay, good. May el theta. Good. Epsilon, you want epsilon instead of eta now because you're taking the augment off. And then lambda, theta, eta, tau, epsilon with a circumflex over the eta. Question? Glenn.
I got a question on number four. What's the original verb? I have a hard time. I got it right by mistake.
Oh, is it decomai?
Where is it, index amata?
Uh-huh.
Recognize the amata as being errors.
Uh-huh.
I didn't see
passive form. Well, it would be
the sigma in there.
What it would be like, it could, you know, when you see an XC, you know a sigma's been added to something, but it could have been a gamma, it could have been a chi, it could have been a kappa, and it turns out to be, I think it's dechomai,
yeah.
A deponent verb,
yeah.
To receive.
Deponent,
yeah.
Page
what for the?
Page 107.
Yeah. Okay, it's a deponent verb, and the stem was a he there, so it was dechomai. Okay, meaning to receive. There was also lambano to receive and so forth too, but this is a different verb. But that is a good point. You know, when you see something like dexomatha, there's several options possible, and it's just a matter of knowing which one it was. And we had some exercises before, you know, where you'd say what are the possibilities here, you know, and then you'd have to look up in the dictionary to find out which one it was. Okay, anybody else with a question on that? Mark.
I have a question about the component of verbs in a subjunctive. On page 266 in section 337, I'm a little bit confused. Is he saying that if you have a component verb in indicative, whichever voice that occurred in is going to occur in the subjunctive?
In other words, the subjunctive is going to carry the deponency in the same form. So in other words, some verbs say were deponent in the aorist, but they were okay in the present, for example. And in other words, the present form of the verb used active forms, and then the aorist form of the verb used passive forms for active meaning. Well, the same would be true in the subjunctive. The present forms of the subjunctive would be the normal present forms, and the aorist forms of the subjunctive would be passive forms, just or passive, middle or passive forms, depending on what it was. In other words, like you said, too, if it was middle, if they used a middle form, the middle forms will carry into the subjunctive. If they used a passive form, the passive form will carry into the subjunctive. Since it's aorist, you see, there's a distinction between middle and passive and aorist, and subjunctives most often occur in the aorist. So that would probably be the thing you'd notice. Yes, and in some cases, there might be both a middle and a passive form that are used, like ginomai.
Is he listing ginomai and erichomai as irregular deponent verbs or just as examples?
Yeah, just as examples. Just as examples. In other words, he's just listing out here ginomai, gine, ginetai, and so forth. He's just kind of going through the paradigm there without putting it in a formal fashion like that. But he's just showing you your root is going to be gin, and then you're going to use omai, a, etai, etai, ometha, este, ontai. You see? It's just the paradigm of it. And then aorist subjunctive, gin, omai, gine, and so forth. Or gineto, ginethes. In other words, it's just the same thing. In the verb ginomai, it's deponent in the present. It's also deponent in the aorist. And in the aorist, it has either middle or passive forms, and both of those can be used. And so he's listing first the middle forms, genomai, gene, genetai, and so forth. And then he lists the passive forms as other options, genetho, genethes, genethe, etc. And then he goes on with erichomai, the same kind of deal. So he's just kind of listing out the paradigm for you. Perhaps, he perhaps would have been better if he just put it in block form like you're used to, then you'd have recognized it a lot more easily. Okay, anybody else? All right, well, let's look at lesson 45 then. We just had gotten started with it. Talking about the subjunctive mood, the relative clauses, and subordinating conjunctions. Again, putting several things together here for the purpose of covering a lot of little odds and ends, and also dealing with the last part of the chapter, dealing with conditional clauses, which are very important. We left off in section 348 talking about indefinite relative clauses. Indefinite meaning when you're dealing with a conceptual matter, perhaps, or a maxim or some set of principle or something of this nature, and you're talking about whenever or whoever, something of that nature, where you've got an indefinite relative clause. The relative clause can be fulfilled by a number of different people, as it were. And you're not really trying to specify a specific person performing a specific action, but you're rather specifying an indefinite situation in which a number of people may fulfill the requirement. So this will come especially in terms of when you see exhortations or commandments or things of this nature. And you see a lot of that in the New Testament. So this use of indefinite relative clauses is quite frequent in the New Testament. We looked at a few. But his point here is you're going to be see on or e'on being used with the subjunctive very frequently in this respect. And We looked at a few examples. Matthew 5:19 here, e'an un luce mian ton entolon, so forth. Whoever therefore breaks one of these least commandments and teaches men so, there's didakse, subjunctive form. And Matthew 20 verse 4, ho e'an he a dikaion doso humin, whatsoever is just I will give you. Whatsoever here, see, using the relative pronoun ho here, neuter form, referring to things rather than persons, and then e'an indicating this indefinite aspect to it, and then the form of the verb to be in the subjunctive here is the construction. So whatsoever is just, or whatsoever is might be just, is the way some of the translations trying to show subjunctive all the time do it. Matthew 20:27, hos an thele, whosoever wishes, you see, to be first among you shall be your servant. Matthew 21:22, panta hosa an aitesete, everything whatsoever you ask for. Now in this case, the whatsoever is the direct object, as it were. Everything whatsoever you ask for. And remember, this verb to ask can take two accusatives, really. Here it's just taking one, the thing that's being asked for. Matthew 6:23, hoti an me aitesis doso soi. Whatever you ask me for, I will give you. And this hoti is not the conjunction, but the neuter of hostis there. In other words, this is the direct object, neuter form of hostis, rather than just because we're so used to seeing hoti as that conjunction that kind of have to watch sometimes, because the form can also be just the neuter accusative or nominative form of hostis. So whatsoever, whatever you ask me for, I will give you. Yes. Okay, that's also from. Let's see, hosos probably is the adjective, whatever, whatsoever, whatever.
So I recognize, I thought most of all,
Those are just the relative pronoun. Relative adjective, I think, is, and it's probably functioning as a nominative here.
Page 239.
Okay, we had it in the list back there. Yes, hosos, as much as many as. All who, all of which. See, it's used as an adjective, as much as or as many as, but then if any adjective can take a substantive function. So that's where you get all who or all which or all that if you use it as a substantive.
So that's neuter plural.
Neuter plural, right. Neuter plural form. Accusative or potentially nominative also. But here it would be accusative. So accusative, neuter plural of hosos. So it's everything or all that, all the things that is kind of the idea. All the things that you ask for, you might ask for in prayer, believing you shall receive. Okay. In the top of the next page, a few more examples. Hostis gar an poiese to thelema tu patros mu, etc. For whosoever does the will of my Father. Whosoever does the will of my Father. So, again, whosoever here, you're getting an indefinite relative pronoun construction, and the on is showing that indefinite sense to it and leading you into expecting a subjunctive verb form. And poiese there, because it's hypothetical, you see. It's subjunctive typically is used in situations that are not relating actual, factual, historical account, but rather are dealing with potentiality, possibility, probability, that type of thing. And so we find here hypothetical situations are very indicative of this kind of thing. So whosoever does in English, we just use the normal indicative form, although we're gaining a kind of subjunctive sense from this just because of the context and the whosoever aspect. But the Greek will typically use their subjunctive in this case. Then Matthew 25:31, hotan de else hohoios tu anthropu en te doxe, so forth. And whenever the Son of Man comes in his glory. So again, this is dealing with the time element now. Whenever, and it's indefinite as far as the exact time, but he's saying that whenever that occurs, certain events will occur with it. Okay, so whenever the Son of Man might come in his glory, you see, again, translating it might all the time may not always be the best either, just because a hypothetical may be in a context where the event is going to happen. It's not really up for grabs or in doubt, and that's the case here. It's not in doubt that it's going to happen. It just hasn't happened yet. So it is not a fact that has already taken place, and it almost gets a certain kind of a future sense to it, too. And that's what some of them mentioned, too, with regard to aorist subjunctives. They often give a kind of a future sense because it's usually dealing with events that haven't taken place yet or hypotheticals that potentially could take place. And so it's not really pure future, of course, but it's dealing with hypothetical situations. Yes, Mark?
I presume that are just basically different forms that mean exactly the same thing.
Yes, as far as I've been able to see, there's no distinction. In fact, it may be that on is just a shortened form of e-on. In other words, just an abbreviated form. I haven't been able to glean any, you know, real difference between those. That it may be worthy of pursuit, but I really doubt that you come up with anything as far as the difference there. I would guess that just e-on is a longer form. Okay, section 349 then. The subjunctive is used in subordinate clauses introduced by hina, hopos, and me, and sometimes in clauses introduced by heos, achris, and mechris. So we're getting examples here. Now, hina, of course, means that or in order that, and you're dealing with purpose very often, and some cases it may be result or content. So let's look at these individually, and he's just kind of introducing this whole thing, and then we'll go through them one by one so we can get an idea of the sense of these. Hina means that, in order that, or so that. Clauses introduced by hina usually indicate the purpose of the action expressed in the main clause, but may indicate its result or content. The meanings which may be expressed by hina clauses, in fact, are the same as those which may be expressed by the infinitive, lessons 32 and 33. So we've already been exposed to infinitives being used both in the sense of purpose and result. And, of course, the difference between purpose and result is often a difference, primarily a difference in your time element. If it's future or present or something like that, it's usually purpose. If the verbs are past tense, it's usually result. In other words, you're looking at after the event and seeing the result of it. Although past tense could conceivably be purpose also if you're kind of projecting yourself backward in time. But in other words, the main thing is just looking at the context to decide whether you're dealing with purpose or result. They're really similar ideas. It just kind of depends on what end of the thing you're focusing on, whether you're focusing on the action that's initiated for the purpose or whether you're focusing on the end result. So those things are just something you have to glean from context. But as far as the uses are concerned, hina clauses with a subjunctive is one of the most, also a very common way to show purpose. You can do it with infinitives or you can do it with this kind of construction. So Romans 3:8, for example, poioso men ta kaka hina else ta agatha. Let us do evil in order that good things may come. Of course, this quotation is kind of unfortunate because the rest of it is saying it's not, as some slanderously report, you know, let us do evil that good may come. This isn't an assertion of the scriptures. But the point here is that the people were saying, let us do evil in order that good may come. This would be an idea of purpose. Hina else ta agatha, in order that might come the good. And so you're seeing purpose here. You're doing one thing in order to see something else come to pass. Then Romans 11:11, lego un me eptaisan hina tesosin. I say then, have they stumbled so that they fell? So have they stumbled so that they might fall, you see, is the way King James translates it. In other words, have they stumbled to the point of falling? Have they stumbled with that result? And then, of course, he's going on. See, this is all in past tense. He's talking about people who at a certain time in history did or didn't do something. And so the idea of result here is gleaned mainly from the context. It might, you see, this same kind of a statement in another context might mean, are they going to stumble? You know, if you change the verb form, the tenses here and so forth, will they stumble that they in order that they might fall? And there you'd see more of a purpose, stumbling in order to fall. But, of course, the meaning of the words and so forth, too, usually you don't intentionally stumble in order to fall. You know, it's not something you normally do purposely. So the meaning of the verbs and the tense ideas and the context are going to be your indicators as to whether you can translate it as purpose or result. The verb forms themselves will not be the indicator here as far as using use of subjunctive with hina. Then another example, 1 John 5:3, haute gar estin he agape tu theu hina thas entolas autu te roman. For this is the love of God that we keep his commandments. Okay, this is what he calls content because he's saying this is the love of God and then giving you the content of what the love of God is. In other words, he's using a subjunctive clause here, and you might translate it, this is the love of God in order that we keep his commandments. But you can see that in English construction, that usually doesn't fit. We're not accustomed to saying this is something and then saying in order that. And so that's, again, why they label this as content and just label this as another use of the subjunctive and a hina clause. So this, again, would have to be gleaned by context. It's the only thing you can really do. And that's usually when you're saying this is something, when you're using a predicate construction in the previous clause. That's where you're going to see this idea of content. So it's pretty easy to identify. And then Philippians 2:7, hotha os eleison, lots of S sounds here, auton, kai eme, hina, me, lupain, epi, lupain, skol. God had mercy upon him and upon and me in order that I might not have sorrow upon sorrow. There again would be purpose. God is having mercy in order that I might not have sorrow upon sorrow. Notice that form skol there. You might not recognize that at first glance and what verb that is coming from. It's actually from echo. And it's the aorist subjunctive of echo. Its base is formed by, this is a footnote down here, its base is formed by dropping the augment of the aorist indicative, eskon, and substituting subjunctive endings for the indicative ones. So it's really regular, but you may never, you know, recognize it when you see it. You have to remember that eskon was the aorist form, aorist indicative form. And that part was irregular, but the subjunctive is regular once you've got the irregular base. Yes, Glenn?
Question, looking at some of these examples. Mm-hmm. In Romans 11:11,
yes.
The clause governed by hina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that aorist? Is that sigma there, or is that a regular part of the base?
Well, it looks like an aorist.
So that they,
although the accent's out in the front, yeah.
My question is comparing that particular to Philippians 2:27.
Mm-hmm.
In Romans, example,
mm-hmm.
Have they stumbled past tense,
mm-hmm.
So that they fell, but, you know, fell is in the past too.
Yeah.
Although the subjunctive doesn't carry that, what I'm getting at, is that governed by the primary verb, so that instead of so that they now fall, or so
okay.
Falling is necessary, or is it?
No, I would say not.
Fall or to continue to fall, depending on whether it's present or error, compared with, God had mercy upon him so that I might not have sorrow upon his sorrow now in the present, where in the other examples in the past,
Right. I'd have to check Pesosin just to see for sure whether it was aorist or present. But
two things at once.
Yeah.
Pesosin, whether it's continuing action or punctiliar, but also the fact that they're translating the subjunctive
as a past tense.
The past tense in along with that past in Romans, but it's present in versus the past in the Philippians.
Right. Okay, here's regardless of whether Pesosin's aorist or not, this is the thing. The translation into English of the verb form, see, a subjunctive, whether it's aorist or present, is got aspect, but it's showing aspect but not time. So in this case, perhaps it looks like we may have a present form. Pesosin may be a present form. I have to check the verb, but it looks like a present form. I think that sigma is actually part of the verb to fall, but I'm not positive. It might be aorist. Anyway, let's suppose it could theoretically be present and only be emphasizing progressive action. And it may be translated indeed as fell or were falling or something because of the fact that the main verb was past. And the subjunctive has only got, this aspect difference. The tense is going to have to be gleaned from the context. And then further down in Philippians 2:27, they give an aorist form there for the subjunctive, but it's being translated that I might not have sorrow upon sorrow. And it's being translated in the present mainly because of the context, and not so much even here because of the verb form, because it is God had mercy upon him, and the whole narrative seems to be in the past. But the point there is have is kind of an indefinite type of thing. You see, possession is something that's usually lingering on for a long period of time. And it's not really a time oriented. It's not so much a time oriented verb, you know, as other things. And so those things are being gleaned from the context, not from the verb forms themselves, as far as the subjunctive forms are concerned. So I would say the verb forms of the main clauses and the context and the tenor of the main clause is going to be deciding how we translate in English a particular subjunctive form in terms of tense. In terms of aspect, we can pick up that from whether it's aorist or present in the subjunctive. We can get the aspect pretty well, but the time we're going to have to get from the context.
Mm-hmm. In the Philippians example, you almost say, see, I'm trying to put that along the timeline. It's almost carrying like a perfect idea that it was in the past because of the past verb and
yes,
the primary verb. But then it's got a sort of just lingering into the present.
Uh-huh.
You know, so the aorist is actually taking over the present place, and the present is being the present subjective is now a past.
Yeah.
Idea because of the past verb in those.
Mm-hmm. That can happen. Because remember, the subjunctive itself is not showing you time. It's only showing you aspect. And so the present or past nature of it is going to have to be gleaned from other things other than the forms. That's going to have to be gleaned from context. I think you checked on this form, didn't you? It's from pipto.
It's
to fall.
Aorist.
Yeah, it's aorist. Yeah, it's pipto means fall. And if you've got page 332 back there in your appendix, you find the aorist active as epheson. There was a suppletion there. That's what I was suspected might be the case. And so it is an aorist, but it's been because of suppletion. So it is an aorist form. But even if it weren't, you know, the point we made concerning your question is still a valid point. It could be conceivably a present form there, a present subjunctive form, and be indicating, say, have they stumbled so that they were falling or something. If you wanted to somehow get a progressive aspect in that action, you'd use a present form, but you still might translate it past because of the resultative nature of the context. Yes, perfect subjunctive does exist, but it's very rare, according to Robertson. I'm not sure if our textbook mentions it or not. I'll have to double check. Yeah, it almost does. That's why they say it's so rare. Their point was that there's really not much reason. If you've got an aorist, what do you need a perfect for in subjunctive? And that's kind of what they're saying. The impression I got from reading it was that it was maybe something that had been developed more in the classical Greek, and then it was being phased out by the time of the Koine, and only a few forms were remaining. I'm just trying to see if our textbook makes any mention of the perfect subjunctive here in the perfect chapter. I don't remember it. It may just be a little paragraph or something. Well, I don't see it here. It may be rare enough where it's not even bothered. They don't even bother with it here. Because in Robertson, of course, he's covering everything and does make mention of it. So maybe when we get to perfect, I'll look that up again and give you some more details on it, maybe give you a few examples of forms of it. Okay. What he says in page 290, subjunctive, no perfect subjunctive form occurs in the New Testament. Where necessary, its place is taken by a perfect participle plus the subjunctive form of ame. So he's claiming that there's none in the New Testament. Now, I'll have to double check on Robertson. Maybe he's just saying that it was in existence at the time, but maybe it doesn't turn out to be in the New Testament. So if it's not in the New Testament, we don't have to worry about it. So that maybe solve our problem for us. But there was indications of aorist subjunctive, of perfect subjunctive. Now, it may be, too, that some of the forms were identical. And so this book is choosing to call them aorist, and the other book's calling them subjunctive. I mean, perfect. I'll have to check on that, because I hadn't run into that before anyway. Okay, now let's look at hopos here, part number two under this section 349. Hopos is synonymous with hina, but occurs less frequently. So again, they're saying it's a synonym it's a function word and it's introducing these kinds of clauses, purpose clauses. It almost always introduces purpose clauses. Hopos is sometimes followed by on, which does not change the translation. Okay? So, let your light so shine before men. You see this hopos idosin humon takala erga, so that they may see your good works. And then and glorify doxasosin, again using subjunctive, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So again, purpose. Let your light so shine before men with a purpose that or for, so that, in order that, they may see your good works. And here hopos is being used rather than hina to show that, but still with subjunctive. Okay, in Romans 3:4, let God be true and every man a liar, so that your words may be just, you may be justified in your words. Hopos on dikaiothes and tois logos su, last clause, so that you may be justified. So again, we're saying let God be true and just giving a statement and then purpose again, so that or in order that. And then Matthew 6:17 and following, same kind of situation. But you, when you're fasting, anoint your head, wash your face, so that you may not appear to be as men as fasting. So again, purpose. Hopos me phanes tois anthropois nes duon, so that you may not appear to men as fasting. Okay. Those are pretty straightforward. I think it's just the same kind of clause, same structure, same grammar as with the hina clauses, except using hopos. All right, then may here is kind of interesting in this respect. May is used as the negative of the subjunctive in hina, hopos, clauses, as it is elsewhere. So, in other words, if you want to negate any subjunctive verb, you'll use may. That's the most common purpose for it. But it may also, however, serve as a conjunction itself with the meaning lest, in order that, or in order that not. In other words, it's not just in order that, but in order that this not happen. So when you want to negate a conditional clause like this, or a purposeful clause, purpose-type situation, or either lest or in order that not, it'll sometimes be expressed simply by may. It frequently follows verbs meaning fear, be afraid, or have a care. In other words, there's certain kinds of verbs that are likely to see this kind of construction. Fear lest this happen to you, or be afraid lest this happen to you, or have care or concern lest this happen to you. In other words, when you're trying to give an exhortation of prevention of something, this is the kind of construction you'll often see. In this use, it is sometimes strengthened by the addition of pos or pote. These combinations are sometimes written may pos, may pote, sometimes may pos and may pote, separate words. So sometimes you'll see them run together, sometimes as separate words. Pos, of course, meant how, and pote meant when, you know, whenever, that type of thing. So the difference between pos and pote may have to do mainly with kind of with manner and versus time relationships, perhaps. Although it's really kind of hard to define in these kinds of contexts. Look at the examples here. Mark 13:35 and following says, "Watch therefore, lest coming he suddenly find you sleeping." Okay, so he starts off here with the verb gregorete un, watch therefore, may elthon, and so here you're going to have to watch a little bit because you're going to see may, and the first reaction may be to try to make it simply a simple negative. But then when you see a subjunctive used further on down, and then looking at the context and the clause relationships, I think you'll usually figure out what it has to be. So rather than translate it not coming, you would be translating it lest coming he find you sleeping. And so that's something to watch for in the construction. 2 Corinthians 12:20 says, "I fear lest when I come I may find you not as I wish." Okay, here's a verb of fearing. Phobumai, we get phobia from that idea, to fear. Gar me pos elthon uch hoi us thelo hero humas. For I fear lest when I come I may find you not as I wish. Okay, and this hero is the subjunctive verb form, and me pos is being used here, separate words here, but giving the idea of lest. Okay, and this post is kind of seeming to deal with manner, finding you not in a manner that I would wish, you see. So I think that may be one element that you can consider there as far as post and pote. Okay, we'll have to stop there and pick up on this tomorrow. and finish out this chapter. No assignment for tomorrow yet. It's going to take us the whole hour tomorrow to go through these conditional clauses. We've got type A, type B, and type C conditional clauses to talk about tomorrow. So you may want to read ahead on that just to make sure that you have some understanding of what it is, and at least can ask intelligent questions about it. Okay. Then we'll be into the next chapter. Is going to be fun. Compound verbs, irregular, some more irregular verbs. If you didn't think you had enough yet, irregular contract verbs and all kinds of things. But this compound verb idea, I think, is the most important thing in the next chapter. That is a very important element in Greek, and we want to pay close attention to it. It's basically adding a prepositional idea onto the front of verbs. Okay.